This week on Out of the Air, printmaking artist Dawn Dinatopoulos returns to update us on her art practice and her involvement with Highland Arts Council. Next, an encore interview with post-graffiti abstract expressionist artist Ish Muhammad, whose work is widely exhibited. Our spotlight is on Chicago Street Theater's production of The Woman in Black, running October 3rd through the 26th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Chicago Street Theater in Valparaiso and their upcoming production of The Woman in Black, based on a novel. It's actually just a two-person play, but we have the director that's going to talk us a little about, Lisa Formoso Parmigiano, and it's opening October 3rd, running through October 20th, and it's an interesting show. Lisa, thank you so much for coming back on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks. Nice seeing you.
Nice to see you, too.
So tell us a little bit about the show, The Woman in Black. It's, as I gather, basically a two-person show with a understudy voiceover going on.
Correct. It's interesting because it sticks very closely to the novel, which is very different than the film that Daniel Radcliffe was in. And it's a ghost story. And I say story because it's really told as if it is a story. There's a gentleman whose name is Kipps who has gone through an experience 40 or 50 years prior, and he feels as if he needs to write it all down and tell it out loud so that he can let it go. So he hires an actor to help him tell the story. So the actor plays Kipps as a younger person going through this, and then the Kipps who wrote it plays all the other characters as he remembers them. So it takes place in an old Victorian theater. We're setting it in Edwardian time, so right around 1905. And it's great because it takes place in a theater on a stage that is in transition. It's not currently being used for a set or anything. So they're performing and talking, they become friends through it. And you get taken through the journey that he went through. And it's terribly frightening at times to hear it. Yes, it is. It's been described as terrifying. And what's interesting is I myself am not a big horror genre fan. I do like a mystery and suspense. And that's what really drew me to this play, because when I read it, I thought, oh my goodness, this is really, it's just an incredibly beautiful story and told in a very simple, non-complicated way. So that's the play, and I'm very excited to be working on it. My assistant director is Whitney Parrish, who is a wonderful consultant with horror and a beautiful photographer, specialist with some of the effects we're working on. And the whole team is really dynamic. The third character that's never mentioned is the effects. I don't want to give it all away, but there are.
Can you sort of set the scene of like what the stage is going to look like without giving way too much away, but the atmosphere of it?
Sure. If you can imagine that you're stepping into an old Victorian theater with footlights at the base of the stage, the teaser and legs of a curtain outlining a proscenium, the ghost light is very prominent, and a couple platforms that have long legs on them that are, some chairs are covered with sheets. It looks like a set is in the process of being taken down. So you are in the actual place where the story is being told. You're immersed in it.
Excellent.
So it's going to be sounds and lights and just, boy, it
there will
so
be
exciting.
Fogs and sound and lights and hopefully even a little bit of wind and a breeze on the back of your neck when you're sitting there watching. Yeah. And I mean, we're trying for all of that.
Now, you're doing this show. How long have you been in rehearsal before you open on the first weekend in October?
We have been in rehearsal 2.5 to 3 weeks already. And we have been working on a lot of the effects prior to even holding auditions. We do have some of the sound. There's a bit of a nightmare at one point where all these sounds and lines and thoughts are going through his head. So there's voiceover, there's pre-taped work. There may be some video imagery that we're using. So all of that has been going on for a while. Work with the actors has been about 2.5, 3 weeks already.
And do you find in a small cast show like this, where you're working with just two actors and made the voiceover, is a much more intimate experience than some of the other things you've directed?
It's absolutely an experience because the connection that the two have, one of them, the young actor, is playing the person, Kipps, who wrote the manuscript, who wrote the story. So they really develop a compassion for each other. You also see a very interesting journey with Kipps because he's not an actor and he says he's not an actor, but he keeps getting better and better and better and more involved in playing the characters. And so on many levels, it was wonderful to see them work together and to work with them.
In our last few moments here, tell us about the show dates and availability at the Chicago Street Theater.
Chicago, we have plenty of tickets available thus far. We open October 3rd and we run 3 full weekends. We do on the second week have a Thursday night where you can come and talk to us afterwards and experience a dialogue with the directors and cast.
We appreciate you coming to Art of Their Spotlight. Lisa Formoso Parmigiano, The Woman in Black, Chicago Street Theater, opening October 4th. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing about the upcoming event.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for talking about it.
Thank you for asking. I really do appreciate it.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program.
Hi, this is Dorothy Graydon. I'm a contemporary artist in Northwest Indiana, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome back Dawn Diamantopoulos to Art on the Air. She was our second interview on October 19th of 2018 when we started our tenure. Dawn works in a variety of media, painting, mixed media, printmaking, and collage. She exhibits widely and was a past recipient of several Indiana Arts Commission grants. She's here to speak about the Highland Arts Council, which is a subcommittee of the Highland Community Foundation, and the events the HAC is producing. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Dawn. It's great, great, great seeing you again.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, Dawn, since we've had you on, we've sort of done this before, but we changed the format a little bit. We want to know your origin story. And since people are probably not going all the way back to our 2018 interview, which is still online, by the way, you can listen to it. But tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you grew up, where you studied, what you did in early school and everything. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Dawn.
Okay. I grew up in Northeast Pennsylvania in a very rural community, and fell in love with the arts at an early age. I went to college for art. I went to Pratt Institute in Brooklyn, New York, and I have a BFA in fine arts printmaking from there. After school, there was not a lot happening in terms of job opportunities. We were in a recession, and I moved to California, and I still made some art there, but I ended up sort of falling out of the art scene a little bit. I moved back to the Midwest in 1998, spent a year in Chicago, and then moved to Highland from there. And I've been in Highland since. Started a family and got back into art probably close to 20 years ago at this point. Started making art again.
Those years go by fast. So I'm going to take you personally back to childhood. So when you're, you know, when you're in elementary school, what is your art? What is happening in art? Is the family artistic? Did you know that you had an inclination toward art early? Were there teachers who saw that? You know, that whole thing. So
my family was not artistic, but my mom's background is in early childhood education. So fine motor skills were, you know, one of those things that I think she probably focused on. So there was cutting and there was construction paper and there was drawing on what we called at the time typing paper, things like that. I can distinctly recall being in first grade and being obsessed with drawing baseball games.
Oh, wow.
Why that was so important to me, but I can remember multiple times drawing, you know, a field with baseball players on it and people, you know, in different bases.
Were you going to games?
I was not. No, I was not. But I think I had a couple of packs of baseball cards at the time, and that probably fueled that imagery.
Gosh, that's so charming. Because I remember sixth grade and I was getting teased for my favorite colors. I mean, like I was brutally teased because of my favorite colors, because it wasn't really what everybody else liked. So drawing baseball sounds fun. So what about as you're progressing, like middle school, high school,
classes
really start happening?
Right. Middle school, I became very interested in fashion design. And I had this big plan and I was going to, you know, I studied French in high school specifically so that I could go to France, which I never made it, because I was going to need to know French if I was going to be a fashion designer. Eventually that sort of fell out. And I, when I started to register for colleges, I was looking at graphic design programs because I thought that's an arts career where I could maybe make some money, where it would be like a quote unquote real job.
Yeah.
But I fell in love with painting. And once I got to school, changed my major to painting, and then fell in love with printmaking and changed my major again to printmaking. And that's where I ended up. I love the process of printmaking. Mm-hmm. I did a lot with photography too. And again, that was all analog. So that was a process. It was, you know, it was shooting the film and developing the film and making test strips of, you know, development times and things like that. and having that, all these different little steps that you had to do to get to the end was something that really interested me.
Yeah, I like the process as well. So what were you, what were those first things you were painting? So what was that first draw?
I did a lot of abstract work. One of the things that I was so lucky being at Pratt that we were in New York City. So there were a lot of museum field trips. There was a lot of, oh, what are we going to do today on the weekend? Oh, let's just go to the Met and wander around the gallery. So I was so very lucky to have that sort of access. And we had a lot of behind the scenes access with curators and conservators and things like that. But one of the things that really struck me my freshman year was I had to go to the Museum of Modern Art and look at Matisse's Red Studio. And there was this ambiguity of space where you could tell what it was there and you were inside a room. But then when you looked at it, the depth of field was played with a lot. Like the table legs were right at the edge of the wall and there's no room for the tabletop if the legs are back there. Things like that, that really informed my art, where you weren't quite sure if it was the foreground or the background because it was both at the same time.
Like so that. Great.
So talk about the evolution of your printmaking. That's kind of what you're focused on now. I know I was looking at both your website and everything and recently, and it, you just were in like with 31 artists in an abstract exhibit at the Indiana State Museum. But tell us about your art and maybe some of your art practice, how you're working in right now.
Okay. I'm very fortunate to have a space in my home right now where I can work. So an at-home studio. I didn't have that for a very long time. And it's enabled me to be able to go in and do a little bit of work and then go do other things and do a little bit of work and go do other things. And that's really helpful because I've been doing a lot of work that involves washes and layering. Mm. I am working on starting some new printmaking things, but I can go and I can do a little bit of work and then I can do something else. And while that's drying, I can work on yet another thing as well. I do tend to come back kind of in seasons of coming back to my printmaking because it's something that I'm doing it without a press now. I'm doing things like linoleum cuts and relief printing and monoprints and things like that that can be done at home without a lot of chemicals and without a lot of heavy equipment and things like that. But I find that being able to incorporate it, even if I'm doing printmaking within my paintings, that's something that is interesting to me as well.
So you describe your work as mostly abstract, but that does have some, I mean, I see one element that has like a pelvis in it, and then the rest of it's more abstract and things like that. So you have some realistic elements that appear in your work.
That's a newer thing.
Surrealistic.
A little bit of surrealism there. There's a lot right now happening with plants and growth and transformation. So you'll see a lot of vines and a lot of leaves and branches and things like that that will reference nature very specifically where they're identifiable. The pelvis, I've got a couple with pieces that have a human heart in them. But it's, for me, the plant material right now is the sort of the part that is a little bit more interesting to me because of the growth. I feel like I personally in the last year have been reinventing myself, that I've been reinventing myself as a person and sort of remembering who I am. And that's part of changes that have happened in my home life and my family life. And that's extended into my art practice as well.
Can you, and you don't have to, because it's kind of personal. Can you explain kind of what that is and how it, like the specific maybe feeling and how it's translated into the work? Because that was a really interesting statement.
So I have two kids. My older son is 24. And a year ago, coming up on a year now, we moved him out of the house. He has special needs. He's got Down syndrome and autism. And it was too much for us to be able to take care of him. It had been too much for quite a while. And it took about 2 years for us to find a good group home placement for him. So if you are a caregiver and you're hearing this, start looking for that before you get to the point where you say, I can't do this anymore, because it's not instant. But that has been a huge relief. That's why I have the space in my house to make artwork, because that was my son's bedroom. It's been a wonderful experience for him, because he's around other people and he is having a little bit of independence away from his parents.
Yeah, the dynamic shifts.
But it's been an amazing, calming experience in my own home. He took up a lot of the air in the house and a lot of the oxygen, and he was physically abusive to me as well. So I just got away from someone who was hurting me all the time. So not being in that situation anymore has been this huge weight off my shoulders. And that's part of how everything in my life has been changing in the last year.
Yeah, it's so interesting how great trauma equals great art. You know, yes. it just opens something in your soul. And
Well,
thank you for talking about that.
Yeah, the piece that you mentioned earlier with the pelvis, that piece is called Change of Life. Mm-hmm. And I'm also just in that age as well. So that sort of had several meanings, where I'm having this huge change of life because I'm in that age, and I'm having this huge change of life because my son has moved out, and that has opened up a whole world of new opportunities for me, both within my art and just within my family as well.
You know, one piece that I'm kind of fascinated with, I pulled up, is it's actually a map. And then you have like something laid over that. And I think these are called mini collages or something like that. But yeah, it's not very abstract. It's very, but I don't know if you actually painted the map or just kind of, but tell us about that piece and some of those like that.
I put out a call to all my friends that if they had old roadmaps, that I needed them, because I was going to start using them in collages. And of course, most people don't need them if they have, you know, they're sitting in their glove box if they've got an older car, because everyone uses their phone or they have navigation in their car already. Nobody really needs those. But I started using those maps and cutting them up and recollaging them in a way that the roads would connect to each other, even though they didn't actually connect in real life. So it was sort of a, how can I get there from here type of situation. And then I also started a small series that was exhibited in Chicago a few months ago, where I was using maps and using that as a part of the background in other work that I was doing. I did some collaborative work with another artist along the lines of how do I begin being, or where do I even begin? And bringing maps in was a good way for me to help illustrate that.
Well, I love maps too. So actually, as a fairly young kid, I got to move to the front seat when we went on road trips, and I was the navigator. I love maps. I still keep some paper maps in my car, because you never know when everything's going to fail. Of course, I use a real GPS. I don't rely on my phone, because if you lose cell service, you lost your map. So,
right.
Well, that is true. I was just holding my maps this morning before the interview. So yeah, they're very, they're luscious.
Well, plus I love, you know, I'm a pilot and I love aviation maps. So, you know, especially, in fact, I one of my weather sites shows the aviation map. It's actually a VFR chart. And I always look at the stuff on that. And it's very fascinating. That would actually be a very good map for, if you continue to do something like that, is an aviation map. You can probably just download the thing electronically and then print it out.
I will look at that. Thank you.
I'll give you links to where you can get those. So
great.
So any new projects for you that you're doing? I know you've been involved with a whole bunch of arts organizations. We want to save the one Highlands Arts Council kind of to the end here because we want you to talk about that last. But tell us about some of the arts organizations that you've been involved with and are still involved with or previously.
Okay. I'm part of South Lake Artists Co-op. And for them, I'm one of the curators on the team for Wild Rose Brewery. And we put together several shows a year there. And then I'm also a member of DAVE, which is Diversified Arts Visionaries. I think that's why I was previously on your show. I'm more just an exhibiting artist with them. I'm not involved with the officers anymore. I just found that my attention was drawn closer to home with Highland Arts mm-hmm. Council. Previously, I had worked for the Town Theater Board as well. I was trying to save the Town Theater, which I was unsuccessful with, but we still did a lot of really wonderful work supporting the arts within our community.
And now it's just an empty
high school.
And now it's just an empty parking lot or an empty lot there sitting there.
Yeah, thank goodness, right? Thank goodness we have that empty lot now.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's too bad that couldn't do that.
And then I also have personally, I have a solo show coming up for November and December at Willow Blooms in Highland on 45th Street. They have a new gallery space there.
Oh, okay.
What will you be showing?
Brand new printmaking and collage work that I am currently working on right now.
So when you're working on new work, is your color palette just whatever it happens to be, or do you like to stick within a specific color range as you're working on a series?
That is a really excellent question. I have found that over the years, even though my artwork has changed stylistically from one series to the next, that a lot of times my palette is very similar. And I like to call it a winter prairie palette because that's sort of what it looks like. It's sort of golds, browns, Payne's gray, which is a dark navy, some creams, a little bit of red. And then I went to Puerto Rico last spring, and I found that all of a sudden my palette completely changed, and it was very bright and vibrant and tropical and lush feeling. And it sort of eased a little bit back into my winter prairie palette now.
So the piece behind you, which now our radio family can't see, is that one of your works?
It is.
Oh, it's just so intoxicating. So what period, when was that produced?
This was one of my prairie paintings. So where I live in Highland is not too far from the Hoosier Prairie, which is on the corner of Kennedy and Maine. And I would drive by there regularly, and I really enjoyed watching how the prairie colors changed and evolved throughout the season. Yeah. So like early spring flowers and then late flowers and the color of the grass changing and leaves, you know, first getting a little bit green in the spring and then later changing in the fall, and how every day the prairie looked different. And I did a lot of work trying to capture that color.
It's true of the lake as well. And it's the winter palette of the lake that just knocks me out when those grasses turn russet and the lake is this sort of creamy blue. It's just, oh my gosh, it's just so beautiful.
Well, one of the other things we wanted to bring you on for is you're involved, and you touched on this briefly, kind of grew out of the whole Save the Town Theater thing, was the Highland Arts Council. And they you're involved with that. And actually, I've reached out to them a couple times. And they finally said, hey, get Dawn to answer the questions. So tell us a little bit about the Arts Council and some of the things they have coming up.
Excellent. Thank you. So I started the Arts Council 3 years ago. I just reached out to everybody that I knew that lived in Highland that was at all involved in the arts of any sort, and said, hey, I'm starting this. Do you want to be involved? And a lot of people said, well, what is it going to be? And I said, I don't know. It's up to us to make it up. We get to decide whatever it is we want to do. So one of the very first things we did was an arts walk. And we have another one coming up on the 28th from 11 to 2. It happens downtown. And we will have artists in about 14 different businesses downtown where you can go in and meet them and buy their artwork and just get to know some of the local artists in our community. Another thing that we are doing on the 28th is we have a brand new mural that's being installed, and we are going to have an unveiling. There won't be an actual curtain, but we're going to talk about it. We'll have the artist out. It's Patty Tobin Davis, and she is painting a native plants mural that is being done in cooperation with the Highland Neighbors for Sustainability. And we're going to have a free native seed giveaway at 10 o'clock there. We have a storytelling event at the end of September, and October 5th, we also have Handmade Highland, and that happens inside Zanstra's greenhouse, the Maker's Market.
Very wow. busy. And those are all September 28th, so for our audience and everything. Anything beyond that you have, or that's, how do you run your season or for the Arts Council?
We fit it in as we can. So we did the Arts Walk all the last Saturday of the month, all summer long. We've had a couple of storytelling events. We try to partner those with an arts walk, but later in the evening so that there's something else happening. We were able to do a film screening of a film that was filmed in part in Highland. That was great. Winter tends to slow down for us because we have done a number of outdoor types things, but we're hoping to have some indoor things happen this winter.
Okay. And now do you have a website, Facebook presence or something for Art Council?
Yes, we're on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find both at Highland Arts Council 219. That's arts with an S.
Okay. And speaking of that, how can people find out more about you, your artwork, website, Facebook, such as that?
I'm also on Facebook and Instagram under Dawn Diamantopoulos, and you can also follow the hashtag It's a New Dawn.
Oh, okay. In our last minute here, do you have anything that you're looking forward to working on that's maybe different, something you haven't done in art real briefly?
One of my hopes with Highland Arts Council is that we can eventually start a film festival.
Wow.
Excellent. So
that'd be great.
Break that news.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like the first Friday in Michigan City, and now in Chesterton area, they're doing the third Friday, and so much like that type of thing. So this sounds great. Well, Dawn, we appreciate you coming on the show. That's Dawn Diamantopoulos, and from the Highland Arts Council, but also an artist herself, and one of our guests early on in 2018, returning to talk to us about that. Dawn, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing not only your art journey, but about the Highland Arts Council.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure seeing you.
Me too.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts.
This is Hannah Hammond-Hagman of Chesterton Art Center, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM and WVLP 103.1 FM.
The following presentation is an encore episode of Art on the Air.
We would like to welcome Ish Mohammed to Art on the Air. Ish is a self-taught artist. His work is post-graffiti abstract expressionism and has been exhibited nationally and internationally in galleries, museums, and site-specific installations. He is one of the founders of Crazy Indiana Style Artists, a talented group of graffiti artists. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. Hi, Ish. It's good to see you.
Thanks. It's an honor to be here.
We loved having you. Well, Ish, I think a lot of people would know about you. They probably heard your name around the region and the arts community, but maybe want to delve into like your background a little bit, which I find very unique and everything. So I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
It all started back in the... Well, I'm first generation Puerto Rican. We call it born on the mainland. So my parents, they grew up in Puerto Rico. My mom in Arecibo, which is a beach coast, the northwest side of the island, and my dad, he grew up in Ceiba, Rio Bajo, in the mountains, which is on the east coast. The east coast, beautiful tropical mountains, farming, all that. So, so they moved to the east coast of the United States. My mom, the way her family ended up here was my grandfather was a migrant farmer. So seasonally, he'd go to Bayonne, New Jersey to pick tomatoes, and then he'd go back home. So that's some, you know, I always find that interesting because you always hear of other nationalities or being migrant farmers, but in the East Coast, a lot of Puerto Ricans were migrant farmers. So that's where how my mother ended up in the East Coast. And then my dad, he moved out here. His mother went before him and moved to New York. And so my dad followed her shortly after. And they met in Lower East Side, New York City. Yeah. And that's where I was born. And my childhood was very bilingual, you know, with my parents speaking Spanish in a totally Spanish-speaking environment, very Puerto Rican environment. But I grew up in the Lower East Side, you know, right next to Little Italy, right next to Chinatown, right next to the Hasidic Jewish communities. So I grew up just seeing a whole bunch of different stuff and different people in different ways and everybody speaking a different language. So yeah, we're in a, you know, when you always hear speak English, you're in America. But that's not the America that I knew as a child. Everybody I knew spoke something else first. And then English was like the common language that everybody communicated together with. Yeah, in Lower East Side, New York, a lot of graffiti, a lot of street art. You know, you're not too far from Soho. And as a little kid, I had a crazy amount of freedom. I think about it now. I don't know what's wrong with my parents.
We left in the morning and didn't get home until dark. Really,
exactly. So we would literally, so long as I made it home by sunset, I had, and every day
no questions asked.
oh, no questions asked. So every day was like, okay, what's our next adventure, if any? You know,
unless a neighbor told on you, that was like the only, like sometimes the neighbors would say, you know, where I saw them.
Oh yeah, because one time they did, you know, they did tell my parents that I was jumping rooftops. Which is, you know, I'm 8 years old. Yeah, they should have told me. They should have told on me, you know. I'm in rooftops, you know. Perfect sport in the city, you know. But I guess for me, my introduction to art was hip-hop. And I love hip-hop, how it started. It was literally formed by teenagers. It was literally formed by, in my opinion, first generation born on the mainland, whether you was from the Caribbean, Jamaican, Haitian in Brooklyn or the Bronx, Puerto Rican, Dominican, you know, it just seemed like hip hop was this nice way to create and form a style and a language that was a little bit more universal, in my opinion, than what was currently the trend. So that's why you'll hear some hip hop, it's got a lot of R&B. Some hip hop's got, you know, in the early, I'm talking about the early stuff, got a lot of disco, because disco was hot, you know?
Right.
Or they just got a lot of congos and bongos, you know, because that's
and dancing.
Yeah, dancing.
Music and dancing.
Music and dancing and style. I just think about that, and just style. We most of us were poor. So we had to find ways to look cool. So we kind of fashioned ourselves differently to kind of stand out and look cool. So that's where the sneakers with the super fat laces came in, you know? That's where the colorful pants That's where you just found ways to just stand out a little bit amongst your peers, you know, because you are in New York City. It's like millions of people there, you know. So that's for me. That was my introduction to art. I'm thankful for my dad, who loved keeping close ties with all his family and all my mom's family. So we would always go visit family. So I had family in the South Bronx. I had family in Bed-Stuy. I had family in Hoboken, New Jersey, family in Philly. So we was always visiting family. And at that time, when the parents visited their cousins or or the aunts and uncles, well, the kids, it's like, all right, go play outside.
Go away.
So sometimes, go ahead.
So within that family, so were you a musical family? Like, has that been passed down generationally, like art and music in some sort of, like, were you seeing relatives and family members creating either music or art?
I'd say, my grandfather was very religious. And my mom, she was a member of the Pentecostal church, Iglesia de Dios. Very, pretty conservative for a Christian group. You know, they long dresses, they wear veils and all that. So it was pretty conservative. And, one of the things was music. They always played music. And so I'd say that was my introduction to music. My grandfather built musical instruments. So he built like a cuatro, which is a traditional Puerto Rican guitar. He built other instruments, and he was known both in New York and in Puerto Rico as a musician. So the music part probably from my grandfather. The art.
Yeah, it's amazing what we absorb. We don't realize we're absorbing it when it's just around us and part of our, family. But these influences.
And I guess it was a very inclusive environment, when the band played. I'm here. I remember as early as 4 years old, I got one of my grandfather's guitars and playing with the church band. Was I playing anything? Probably not. But you couldn't tell me that back then,
No, the intent is there.
Yeah. And from my grandmother, my dad's side, she was a doodler. And she grew up very native. And by native, I mean Native American, very, very Taino, very in the mountains. So she doodled a lot. She just was super creative in her own way, in her own kind of bohemian New York City kind of way. At least that's the way I translated it, because I really didn't see her on the island. I always saw her in New York, from man, thanks for letting me share this, because this is good. My grandmother, she would take us everywhere. She was not scared to ride the subways. So she would take us to all these parks, like New York City, just like nothing, and we just go play at a park, and all right, we'll either catch a train or walk back home. And New York in the 70s and the 80s, it was different than it is now, especially the Lower East Side, So I'd say for me, that played a strong part in my identity. And going to school, hip hop being created in real time by youngsters just a couple years older than me. I'm in elementary school, but you got junior high school kids, high school kids, learning how to DJ on a turntable, practicing breakdancing moves, writing the name on a wall. And that's my first, there's a saying, if I can see you, I can be you. Mm-hmm. And here I am as a child seeing these people doing all this creative stuff. Not perfect, but good enough for us to build off of. And fast forward today, 2023,
hip hop celebrating its 50-year anniversary this year. So it's super interesting how that evolves.
I was curious, any particular hip hop artists that you enjoyed, like in the early hip hop?
You know, there's so many to name. And let me back up. Hip hop has different elements, right, Larry. So you got the rapping, you got the DJing, you know, you have the graffiti writers, you have the break dancers. And am I missing one? No, it'll come back. So I'd say, you know, you did have favorites. Like when it came to like breakdancing, I really looked up to Crazy Legs, not just because of how he was moving, how he moved, but just his confidence and his very cool nature about things. As I saw it, you know, I only seen it on TV, you know.
Right.
When it came to like to DJing, I'd say back then it had to be like Grandmaster Flash. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen even like the movie see the wild style, where he's kind of doing some DJing, and you know, it's in the movies. Well, you know, this literally was filmed in his mom's house in the project, you know, like in the kitchen, you know, because that was his setup, you know. But you know, and that's how it was. It was there. You was set up where you can set up, you know. And MCs in the 70s, not really. Graffiti writers, I just, you know, there was probably the neighborhood graffiti writer was Lee, L-E-E. So I grew up just seeing a lot, and Lee is known internationally. He was one of the first muralists. He was one of the first graffiti writers to do whole trains, you know. And here he is in my neighborhood just doing handball courts, like, you know, these world-famous handball courts that everybody, you know, looked up to as the epitome of high graffiti art. It's literally a handball court I'm playing handball on, you know what I'm saying? So, and so Lee was one somebody I looked up to. And then just the whole movement, you know, the whole practice makes perfect, and just keep doing a lot of it is what I really appreciated it, you know?
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. So Ish, when you, like, if we can talk about the graffiti, because there's like, when you, there's like two ways to approach it. You know, you've got the train where it's got to be fast and furious, and you kind of just got to go fast. But how do you approach, like, when you're commissioned to do a mural on a wall, and I don't know if you get complete direction or it's just like, just do it, just, you know, whatever comes to you. How do you approach that? And what are your elements that you're adding in? Because they just, they look so well thought out. And the colors play so beautifully together that I'm just kind of curious what do you do when you first approach that blank wall?
When I first approach a blank wall, it's and the now in my later years, both are getting real parallel. Like it's almost like the same approach. For me, graffiti writing, just the way I practice my art, the way I fellowship with my peers, it's like it's an urban sport, very similar to golf, in the sense that, you know, you're practicing in the range, your driver, you're practicing your chipper, you're practicing. So you think you got a good handle on the clubs, until you get to that that first hole, which is that wall, you know, and now you got to kind of play the game with your peers. So now, okay, I'm at the wall with my cans. I've been practicing. I've been sketching. I've been doodling. Okay. But now it's game time. Let's see what you got.
Yes, truth now.
Yeah, and it's very much like golf in the sense that you know, you're giving each other a hard time, but you're also fellowshipping. You know, you're supporting each other, and you are keeping tabs. There has to be a winner. Yeah, so when I do my murals now, it's very similar. I really, you know, I really appreciate when they give me a loose direction. I just assisted with the Arts Hammond Association this past weekend. We did Merge Walls, and we brought 25 artists to wrap the Merge building in Hammond, Indiana, 5920 Holman Avenue. And it was nice, you know, we had support from the city, which is nice for them to trust the organization to pull off a successful and safe event with some beautiful artwork, you know? So I had full artistic license on the wall. So whenever I get full artistic license, I always say, well, you're going to get something good because I'm always going to try something I don't do, you know? Yeah, I don't, and the only reason I like doing that is because it's still fun. It's still challenging.
Right.
Something that I know, then it's just technical. You know, it's just, let me just do, it just becomes a technical approach to making art versus the whole challenge of, oh, why did I put pink there? Now what am I going to put next to that pink, you know? But, you know, so it's, that's how I approach murals when I get full artistic license.
Uh-huh. The collaboration with Jiffy Lube and the mentoring, is that a process that you enjoy, the mentoring of, you know, younger artists?
I do, because I'm getting older. And, you know, it's just, I don't want to leave and not setting up a foundation or a platform for other artists to come and follow. You know, hopefully I can create a model that other artists can follow or can use for their practice, their career. And so I love working with youngsters. It's a weird one because, you know, I'm in my 50s, so 20-year-olds don't necessarily want to hang out with 50-year-olds, you know? So how can I get these 20-year-olds engaged and interested? I'm open to opinions, Larry.
Well, I think you're just by doing that type of art. What I was going to ask you in your resume, you studied electrical engineering, which is kind of a very disciplined way in another way, but, first of all, tell us a little bit about that, but also, when did you pick up the first can and create your first piece of art or graffiti?
Well, my first tag was probably in second grade. Yeah. So, you know, and this was all of us, my whole little clique. I was all the second graders. We all picked up a name, had a marker, and just wrote, scribbled it in the bathroom wall, you know, or in the park. So then, actually picking up a can wasn't until I was a teenager.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I'd say I was maybe 13 when I actually picked up a can and do graffiti.
Well, and the other part is electrical engineering. How did you get steered into that as a completely different discipline?
Well, it's funny because I grew up pretty dysfunctional, you know? Just the way growing up here in Northwest Indiana, single mother household, and just once again, a lot of freedom. And so I was very, you know, I consider myself smart. I took all the college prep classes, you know, I'd show up once a week and do good on the test. So I was a teenage dad. So I had to leave. I went and joined the army. You know, I came back a decorated soldier from Operation Desert Storm, you know? So I used my GI Bill. And at the time, I had three children and one on the way married. And I'm like, well, man, I got to get a degree that I know I can get a job when I graduate. You know, so I chose engineering because with engineering, you know, you could either be an engineer or you can, you know, there's a lot of management opportunities, so you don't have to just be an engineer. So that's why I chose that degree. And while going to school, I just kind of joined student organizations so I could learn the soft skills that's needed, you know. How do you get people engaged? How do you create a group, you know, to go after one thing, you know? When you would think in college, all you should be worried about is your degree. But no, you got to figure out how to network, because these future graduates that are next to you, they can either be your next boss or your next lead, you know? Yeah. So I got my engineering degree. I've been working for NIFSCO now, going on 18 years. So I'm very blessed.
Any future art projects coming up? We're recording this in the middle of July, but what projects that you have in mind down the road here, maybe into late summer, early fall?
A lot of my projects now are more art advocacy. So I know with Arts Hammond Association, we want to give the Man of Steel in Harrison Park a facelift, fix him up, paint him up. Vice president of the board for the New Brunswick Center for the Arts. So we got the Arts Fest coming up in August. So I'm leading the committee for the Arts Fest. So just want to make sure we have a successful event there. So that's my year. I got a show in Zobie in September that I'll be doing it with Gary Juarez. And that'll be fun. Just staying busy,
Sounds great. Well, how can people find your art online, social media and things like that? Let us know how, and maybe reach out to you to maybe they have a project for you.
On Instagram, I'm at Ishrock. It's a blue goose icon. On Facebook, it's Ish Muhammad. I don't know what's on there. And my website's ishmuhammad.com.
Excellent. Ish, we've been trying to get you on the show for some time, and you have shared so much of your life story, which I find fascinating. And I'm glad you took time to your busy schedule to slot us in. That's Ish Muhammad, artist, Northwest Indiana. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your art journey.
Yeah, it was fabulous. Thank you so much.
Thanks. This was fun.
We'd like to thank our guest this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell it to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.